Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, August the 12th, and wherever you're listening to me tonight, hello from Dallas, Texas. We always love it when Leslie Eastman joins our show, and she's going to be joining us here in a minute. Leslie has a wonderful guest that she's going to introduce, an author, and we're going to get into that in a minute. So let me say hello to Leslie. How are you, Leslie?
Happy to be with you for another fun evening, you know, a hot summer day, clearly, across the country. So hoping to have a little summer fun tonight by talking about something other than, you know, the state of the country. But
that's right.
You probably might mention that once or twice just to keep it real. But
you cannot get away from it too much. But, you know, Leslie, I was going to tell you this. When you said everybody listening tonight, I've noticed that, you know, Blog Talk Radio has like a little map and it tells you where people listen to you. And I all of a sudden, people are listening to us in Russia. And I'm wondering if it's because of you or it's because of me, or is it possibly that some of these Russian dating services that keep contacting me on Facebook, you know, maybe, I don't know, something like that, but it's interesting. It's fun because all of a sudden, you know, I expect, you know, America to listen. I expect Canada, Mexico, but all of a sudden these, you know, a few listeners in Russia, and I keep thinking, oh, wow. Well, maybe it's those, you know, dating services that keep sending me all these pictures in Facebook. I always disappoint them, though, when I tell them I'm already married and I'm not really interested in some beautiful girl from Ukraine. But nevertheless, they keep sending the stuff. So anyway, I thought you would want to know that, Leslie, that there may be a couple of people in Russia listening to us.
Yeah, well, that is. That is interesting, and a big shout out to our comrades, you know,
that's
in Moscow and St. Petersburg. So.
Yes, hello, comrades, and welcome to the show. I believe
you can order Michael's new book on Amazon, so you should be able to get it in any place that sells Amazon, including Russia. Though
yes.
I don't think Michael has had it translated into Russian yet. But if we sell enough books, that surely will come.
Well, I tell you what, we're gonna make sure that Michael's book is a bestseller in St. Petersburg. That's what we're going to do. We're going to make sure.
That's our goal.
That's our goal tonight. But anyway, well, Leslie, as always, you always have a wonderful person, a wonderful guest joining us. So let me have you please introduce Michael Sullivan, please.
Yeah, it's my personal pleasure, Silvio. My friend Michael Sullivan is probably one of the greatest guys I've ever met. And I say people have social intelligence, but Michael is an emotional intelligence genius. And he's got an extensive background. He has a PhD from the University of Oregon, and he did his work related to drug abuse concerning U.S. combat soldiers, evolved and grew in his profession. Ended up teaching at San Diego State University, and how I know him is he's a family friend. He worked with my father-in-law at a headache clinic and did a lot of work on biofeedback. So long story short, my friend Michael and I were chatting a lot about various things, and he really inspired me to pursue my dreams of punditry and opining, which in part helped bring me to Canto Talk. But in exchange for these really supportive conversations, he and I made a deal that I would edit his book. It was his dream to publish, and as he's now in the next phase of his career, instead of focusing on his psychology, we are going to focus on his writing and his fabulous new book, Beyond Demon, that has just been published on Amazon and is available to enjoy on Kindle or in paperback. So welcome, Michael.
Well, hello, Leslie, and thank you for having me on. Let's have some fun here.
That's it.
Yes,
that's it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, somebody's got – are you on the speakerphone, Michael, by any chance? Because I get some feedback. I just wondering if you could it sounds like you were on a speakerphone. Yeah, because I was getting all kinds of feedback, so it was distorting the noise. So if you can do it without the speaker, that will keep us without all that noise. But anyway, that would be a big favor.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm not on a speakerphone. I just have earphones on.
Oh, okay. No, whatever it was, there was a lot of feedback, and I just thought, but that's fine. That's fine. It sounds great right now. You sound absolutely great
that's
right now.
My personality.
Well, that's it. That's it. That's what Leslie said, that your personality would be so impressive. Let me just ask you a quick question, Michael, before we get to the book. I'm sure Leslie has some great questions for you. Just give us a little biography about Michael Sullivan.
Wow, that's going to be interesting. Let's see.
Well, you got 60 minutes.
Start...
So you got plenty of time.
Oh, okay. Grew up in L.A. and went to school there. I was not a good student, I got to tell you. I flunked out of junior college a couple of times, and I didn't really get my act together until I went in the Marine Corps. And I went into the Marine Air Reserve out of Los Alamitos Air Station. And my unit didn't get called up for Vietnam. And actually, I had an injury. I fell out of the helicopter on my right shoulder and injured myself. And when they were treating me, they said, well, you're going to be released from the Marine Corps because, as you probably know, everyone is on a fire team. You have to be able to fire a weapon. And my shoulder was damaged enough where I could not. So they ended up releasing me on a medical discharge after about a year and a half of attending meetings. But my time in the Marine Corps, I got to tell you, really changed my life around. I mean, I can't tell you how important that is to get discipline and goals and objectives. And it got me back into junior college after flunking out a couple of years and pulling straight A's. And then I came down, I was accepted to three different schools for my bachelor's degree, and I drove down from LA to San Diego, and I actually made a wrong turn. Instead of going east, I went west. I ended up at Mission Beach and went out on the beach, spent the day at the beach, drove back home and told everyone, I'm going to San Diego State. The campus is just gorgeous. So got my bachelor's at San Diego State. Then I thought I wanted to teach. So I ended up getting a teaching credential at San Diego State. And in my student teaching, I found out I didn't want to teach. I could not work in administration because one time the classroom was so hot, I took the kids out in the lawn to teach, and the principal was just pulling his hair out. It was like his hair was on fire that I broke some code or something like that. So I didn't feel that was a place for me. I didn't want to work for people like that. I just felt very uncomfortable. So I went back to school, and I went into the counseling side because I really enjoyed working with the kids in the counseling side, and got a master's degree. And after that, went through Europe for a little while, lived in caves on Mykonos, on the island of Mykonos for a while, and did a lot of funky things throughout Europe, and came back, and I actually got a job. I applied for a job at the Miramar Nebula Air Station, because what they were doing, they were setting up a drug rehab center for the returning Vietnam vets and for the vets who are still in the battle zones that became addicted to heroin. So that it was really big at that time to, what are we going to do with these Marines? I mean, they're trained killers, and they're coming back, and they have a drug habit. They're going to make society turn it upside down, which was totally absurd. But anyway, they just threw all kinds of money in this program, and I was lucky enough to be one of the civilians to be employed there. And I started the first drug rehab center where the guys would be in Vietnam 1 minute for one day, and then the following day they'd be landing at Miramar, and we'd be checking them to a in-house facility for rehabilitation. And I was lucky enough at that point, they had drafted two psychiatrists from Langley Porter in San Francisco. And they were, one of them was running the program I was in. And he said, look, I'm going to be here for 2 years. You're going to be here. Why don't I train you in psychiatry? So I was lucky enough to have him train me for over a couple of years in psychiatry, where we had journal clubs and he would watch my therapy and point out inconsistencies and what I was doing and things like that. So the value of that was just tremendous. So I went from there and went up to, I was accepted at the University of Oregon to do my doctorate. And I went up there in a summer and it was just gorgeous. It was, everything was green. It was beautiful. And I'm a guy that has always lived the beach. At the beach. When I was in LA, I lived in along the beach area, San Diego in the beach area. And so I go, oh, this is beautiful. The mountains here are so green. And so I got accepted. So I went up there. And what I didn't know, it rains like 9 months out of the year. So I was in crisis not seeing the sun. It was just hilarious. So I had to drive back to San Diego every about 5 to 6 weeks just to be in the sun, just say, okay, yeah, there's sun out there, okay? So, but my time at University of Oregon was really special. I volunteered for the mental health program there in Eugene, Oregon, and was on the board of the hospital at Salem with Ken Kesey's wife was there on that board and did a lot of work there. And as you will recall, that's where One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was based. Mm-hmm. And when I finished, I was lucky enough, as you know, doctorate programs take a long time, but I really doubled up on my coursework. And they gave me they said I didn't have to do my internship because I felt if I went out to the hospital to do an internship, I would be training the staff because I had so much training when I was at the Miramar Naval Drug Center in psychiatry. So that was, I got a year taken off there. And then when I was there at the drug rehab center, I collected a lot of data. And what I did, I made that part of my dissertation. So that knocked off another year. So I got through the program in about 3.5 years, which is kind of unheard of, or about 3 years actually. So that was nice. And then I was lucky enough to interview for a job back down in San Diego to teach graduate school. And I taught graduate school for a while. Then I went into teaching postgraduate continuing education training. And once the students would graduate and they'd go out and work in the field, then I'd go out and kind of do some retraining and do continuing education. And so the states that I trained in was California, Arizona, Nevada, and Hawaii and the territories. So I had a lot of flying time. And so that's how the book kind of came about. I started writing on airplanes for something to do.
Yeah.
So kind
before,
of a real...
Sounds like a very interesting kind of life to me. I mean, it sounds like a wonderful, interesting life. I'm sure some of it will be reflected in your book. I just have a quick question before I turn you to Leslie. Where did you say you spent some time in? What islands?
I lived in Hawaii on Oahu three different times, and then when I was traveling in Europe, I spent some time in Mykonos, the island of Mykonos, which is one of the Greek islands.
Oh, okay. And, okay, now I got it. Okay,
and now I'm talking. This was late '60s, so the highway only went to the center of the island, so you would backpack it to the back side where there would be a contingency of Americans and Europeans that lived in the caves there.
Oh, okay.
And we had a great time there.
All right. Now, that was very interesting when you said that. I thought you meant those islands in Greece, but I just wanted to double check.
Yeah.
Leslie, take it away.
All right. So, yes, and as you pointed out, if the book is called Beyond Demon, and it features a lot of the areas that you talked about. And I have to say before we begin that the timing of your book could not be more perfect. As it is set in the 1970s, the parallel to today's life with the inflation, the drugs, and the, you know, Vietnam and the fleeing of Saigon, so many parallels in today's life. So that is definitely in the book. And I want to point out that the book is available on Amazon. It's Beyond Demon. There is a website, michaelsullivanfiction.com, and people can go to that for further information. So, Michael, tell me what was the inspiration behind this story? Why don't you set the stage and give us the background to start with?
Okay. I'll be real honest with you. It was kind of bizarre, but this happened over 25 years ago, and I was kind of in the health kind of period of my life. I wanted to really do a lot of healthy things. So I think about, you know, I'm going to fast for a couple of days. So I went into fasting, drinking the water and everything. And but the second day I felt so good. I said, you know, I'm going to keep doing this. You know, I really feel. And then what happened around the third or fourth day, I'm going, I'm saying to myself, going, wait a minute, there's something going on here. I'm not feeling high. I think I'm kind of starving for food right now. And maybe I'm in the process of dying. I don't know. Because I was having a lot of visual things going on and all that. So it was during fasting period that I kind of came up with the idea. I go, you know, I want to put together a story. I didn't know about a book, but a story. And I kind of want the basis to be kind of have it to run in a circle, you know, so where it starts, it ends up at the end of the story. And I wanted to have some mystical qualities into it. So what I did, I based the book. It starts in the 1880s in the frontier, and it deals with the concept of kind of the bad seed, like families have the bad seed. And I really want to present that idea that life is in balance. You know, if you take a look at Mother Nature or whatever you want to call it, you take a look at your blood pressure. You have too low of blood pressure, you need medication. Too high of blood pressure, you need medication, okay? How about your temperature? The same thing with temperature. Too low a temperature, something's going on. Too high a temperature, you have a fever. And even with anxiety, I mean, you have to have anxiety to give you kind of a lust for life. So if you have too low anxiety, you need something to pick that up or you fall into depression. And if you have too much anxiety, then you're going, well, possibly need some medication or working out or meditation or something to kind of pull that anxiety back. So I wanted to do a book based on kind of that balancing thing and try to work it into the story somehow and start off with evil. And it involves these four brothers in the 1870s that were just – comes from a family – and they're basically just really evil individuals where they're bank robbers and they love to kill. And they leave a trail of blood, you know, whenever they do their robberies. And I have them move into, not tell too much about the book, move into California where they're involved in a robbery and a murder. And it involves, at that point, three family trees at that point get involved, members from three different family trees.
That takes us on to your hero of the story. And when we come from the 1870s to the 1970s, essentially, so 100 years where the decisions made in the 1870s impact those in the 1970s and the family lines that are left behind. And this is where we pick up your hero, Morgan Chapman. And I want to say, having edited your book and having read it a couple of times as a result, it is a man story. It is a very male book. And I would really encourage men who are really tired of the young adult fiction to to give your story a try, because it is filled with adventure and action, and the men are allowed to be men in this story, which is an unusual break from a lot of the fiction being produced. So set us up a little bit. Your hero, Morgan Chapman, and it's going to be a series, so he'll feature in the series, kind of like a James Bond, but a James Bond set with Marines and hippies, you know, associated with the 1970s. So tell us a little bit more about Morgan.
Yeah, it's it kind of goes from the 1870s to 1968, and it follows this a Marine that has had two tour of duties in Vietnam. He gets out in the GI Bill. He goes to San Diego State and living at a fraternity, and then his cousin's there, and they go down to Mexico, and they get into – they don't get in trouble, but there's some trouble down there that they get – accused of. And this is when the family member from the 1870s get introduced into the story again. So it's these three kind of family trees where the universe is trying to balance out here and wipe this evil out again, because the person they run into, Luke Hammock, is part of the family that killed part of Chapman's family back in the 1870s. But they don't have a clue, but the reader knows all about it. And so they get accused of a crime down in Mexico that they didn't they weren't involved in. Basically, it's a murder. And they get chased back across the border by the Federales all the way back. And there's a lot of subplots going on as they're coming back, getting back into the United States. And they come back, and what happens, then Morgan Chapman faces some trauma.
Well, don't
by...
give too much of your plot away,
okay.
but in other words, there's plenty of action, plenty of adventure. You gotta leave me wanting more, but it is, you know, the settings though, the life in the Mexican resort, is that based on your personal experience?
Yeah, some experience down there. Some of this book is real, let's say. Some of the funny stuff in it. There's a couple of really funny situations that I think are just hilarious that has happened to me while attending San Diego State. And so I was able to put that into the book and bounce.
I can testify that there is a lot of humor. And again, it is you know, it is funny. There's like lines, and it's written with a lot of that really great humor you have. But again, it deals with all sorts of serious issues like drug smuggling, corrupt government officials, you know, brutality, rape.
Gee, we're talking about
today,
aren't we?
It's
really
so
related to the day. I mean, corrupt officials, you know, drug smuggling, you know, corrupt politicians.
The only thing it's lacking is, you know, an insurgence of illegal immigrants and a pandemic virus. But other than that, pretty much.
Leslie, that's my sequel.
Okay, good. You know, we don't want to leave anything out, you know.
Just kidding. But the sequel's about 50% done. So I'm hoping now. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's we start with your hero continues on in the series. How much of Morgan is in you, Michael? Because he's a Marine. You had a Marine. Is this a person, a character that you designed to be your like who you'd want to be, your fantasy character, or is it just a convention, you know, archetypes based on the psychology that you've done?
Let's say that I grew up in the 60s, like I'm 78 years old now, and I had a lot of interesting friends. So what I did, I took a lot of that I was involved with these friends and what they were involved with and all that, and kind of pulled it out and teased it and put a lot of it into the story. But it's still a fiction book. You know, there's a lot of things in there that did not happen. but it is based on a lot of my experiences.
Yeah. Leslie, let me jump in for a second. Let's take a break right now, and then we got plenty of time with Michael after. So let me take a little break, and we'll continue with our friends Leslie Eastman, as well as Michael Sullivan, the author of this wonderful book that I'm learning about tonight. We're going to take a little break and be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Like many of you, I'm listening to this wonderful interview and getting very interested in reading this book. You're doing a great job, Leslie, as always. But I do have a quick question. I do have a quick question for Michael, and it's a follow-up on something you said, Leslie. You said that, you know, the 1970s are similar to now, and in some ways they are. And one of the ways that we may be watching here in the next few days, or maybe the next few weeks, the collapse of Kabul, Afghanistan, and we're now taking people out of the embassy. And I'm old enough to remember when that happened in Vietnam, Michael. So I don't know. I don't want to take you off the topic too much, but I'd like you to comment on that. If that, you know, this, you know, we're sending troops to bail people out of the embassy in Kabul, Afghanistan, just like, unfortunately, we did in Vietnam back in 75. So just take a second and talk about that, please.
Oh, right on. It's a nightmare. Isn't it a nightmare? It's like, the only way I can describe it is kind of like reverse evolution. What are the politicians thinking about? You know, they don't have a game plan. What they have is they're short-sighted. They have no sets of goals for long term, looking down the road. I don't even know if their brains can secondary think, because what you need when you get involved in these type of activities, you stay involved until you have a successful outcome on it. And making sure that it's safe. When you go into a country, you have to make sure it's safe for the people living in this country. Another administration doesn't come in and pull everybody out and expose people to threats of their life, their property, and their children. I mean, I can't tell you. My hair goes on fire when I hear some of this stuff. I mean, yeah. I don't want to use any four-letter words, but it's frightening what's going on.
No, and especially in Afghanistan, where we had a military situation for the last 5 or 6 years, where really the troops were not engaging in any fighting. They were there as an insurance policy. It was like an insurance policy, really, and it was working out quite well.
It was a great plan, So I was really happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, let me give it back to Leslie. Leslie, we got lots of time.
I will just summarize my thoughts by saying I wish the Afghanis joy of their new Chinese overlords, because that's what's going to happen. So So yeah, it's very sad, and so much blood and treasure. And I hope this is a valuable lesson for all Americans going forward, especially when they pick their presidential candidates. So
yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, back to the book, Leslie.
Well, as I will remind our listeners, but Michael's book is called Beyond Deem It. It is available on Amazon. And, again, check out his website, michaelsullivanfiction.com. There's links to Amazon there, including updates on his current book and the one that he's working on, because, indeed, this is going to be a series. And I'm hoping eventually somebody in Hollywood savvy enough to make a movie, because it is really – Hollywood has run out of original ideas, and Michael's book is nothing but original ideas. So this is a great opportunity, Hollywood, to, you know, reclaim some of your old glory. So anyway, getting back to Michael's book for a second, I will note, as Silvio can attest, Michael, that I put Egypt in everything that I touch, right, Silvio?
Yes, I knew this was coming, Leslie, and I was just wondering in what minute it would show up. So here it comes. Great. All right.
So yes, there is a reference to Egypt in this book, and I will give a free copy to the book for any one of our listeners who figures out exactly where that reference to Egypt is in the book. So I'm just giving that as kind of a contest to help promote Michael's book. So, but Michael,
good
kind
job,
of getting
Leslie.
Back.
Leslie, that was great. I like that. I like that. It
he
could the clue.
My book. I love that.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep that a secret tonight, Leslie. You can tell me some other time. I guess I don't qualify for the free book, so I'll let some listener do it. All right. Go ahead, Leslie.
All right. All right. So Michael, getting back again to the context of the book. You use a lot of musical references in the book, which I thought was interesting because one of the things that I can attest to the fact, having, you know, read it, is that you don't write words. You create visualizations and you make listeners not only see things, but also hear things and smell things. So you mentioned Bob Dylan a lot. Tell me a bit some about the musical inspiration that's incorporated into this book and why that's important.
I try to stimulate people because I'm a very visual person and my senses are going wild on that. So when I did the book, I tried to put that as much as I could into the book because it starts, as you know, with a reference to a very famous group. And there's a couple other references throughout the whole book about the music and them listening to the music. And so I wanted that to put in the book to give people, I want to take them on a visual trip, you know, through it. I wanted it, and I tried not to have too many doors shut on them. I wanted it to keep going, the visuals on them. So I didn't put a lot of filler into it, and all the way to the ending, and I'm very happy with the ending. I don't know about you, but I'm always upset when I'll read a good book and they didn't know how to end it, or I'll watch a movie and they didn't know how to end it. I spent a lot of time on the ending to try to, I don't want to tell people what I did, to try to make it interesting with them. So when they're through with this, they'll go, wow, that was a ride. So I'm trying to incorporate the whole being when they're reading the book, you know. And I just had a friend of mine read, I have a friend in Maui, and he doesn't read a lot. And he just sent me a text last night. He said, damn it, Michael, you made me stay up all night. I couldn't put the book down. And I loved the ending. Yeah. And so that was really positive to me because someone that doesn't read a lot, he said, I just really enjoyed the trip. It kind of, you know, brought back some memories and things like that. So I was real happy about that.
Yeah, I think that's important to point out is that for me, I read when I'm not doing science or opinion reading, I want to be taken away. I want to just be engrossed in the story. And I don't want to be preached to. I don't want to be moralized to. And you have this really wonderful story. It's very, you know, there's hints, there's, you know, and there's a lot of interesting background on the Southwest. Yet it is really a driven, fast-paced, you know, action story. So it's a nice blend of, you know, bringing the 60s and 70s out with also character development and making the plot go where you want it to go with some interesting diversion. So just really nice. And I just wanted to point out that I think the music of that era was part of what makes that era special. So there's Bob Dylan. And I know that I forced you to put in the Doors because I like the Doors. When I turned back my first edited version to you, and I was really, you know, it was very challenging for me because I do a lot of science and technical writing. So writing fiction is not my strong suit. So when I turned back the changes for you, what was probably the biggest change I made that you liked, just out of curiosity?
Wow, you did so much. You know what you did? I'll tell you what you did. You presented a very important image in there that I didn't like it in the beginning. And then it was like a couple days later, I think I had a dream about it, and I woke up, and I go, wow, she gave me an item that I can put in this and talk about it in a few chapters to where it appears at the end, and it makes all the difference in the world. But I'm not going to tell you what it is, because that's we'll talk later, because that was
okay.
So special, because it gave me a way to create a situation. Well, I don't want to go too much further, but I mean, that was a real positive image you gave me. That, and you know, it took me a while, and I chewed on it, and I go, oh, this fits perfect. You know, where you have that instant insight of 2 days later, you know, you go, wow, why didn't I think about this before? You know, this works. So that was number one. But I'm sorry I can't tell you what it is, because I'll give it away to the readers, what's going on. I don't
No. You keep it.
Say,
yeah. Well,
I might say, remember, this is good versus evil, or I should say evil versus good. And so at the end, as what we all want in a fairy tale or in a good story, that we rise above the whole thing and good, you know, happens. It's all the positive things happen, and, you know, love connections, and the world is balanced again. You know, this person's world, you know, Morgan Chapman's mm-hmm. world is balanced again. Mm-hmm. And that's where we all need to be. Get that equilibrium there. You know, don't go one way or another, kind of, you know, get that balance effect.
Absolutely. So,
makes sense? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, one of the challenges for me is for editing that book is that I am clearly a woman, and I didn't want to take your voice away. So you definitely have a very much man's perspective in that book that needed to be retained, which I'm very glad. I will tell Silvio, our friend Aaron Clary, Captain Capitalism, was involved in this project too. He
yes.
helped Michael self-publish. So,
yeah,
okay.
Aaron is a great guy, just a wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
He can help you a lot.
But I want to talk to Leslie about something. There are two very strong women in this book.
We were headed
very
right there.
Women.
Yeah, we.
Yeah.
We were.
And in the sequel,
headed right
you'll
there.
See where. And when the sequel, you'll see where there's a few more. So I truly enjoy the strong woman, you know, in people's lives that helped shape the future. You know, families, husbands, and things like that. So I tried to give both these women a lot of power in their character.
Yeah. So, let's talk about one of these women, Diana, because I have to say, I believe I helped pick her name because, you know, just to emphasize, to emphasize, you know, her nature. And, you know, was there a particular woman that you were thinking of who is the inspiration behind this character? Because this is, again, set in the 1970s, where there was a real transition between how women were expected to behave and how beginning to open up in different ways for women at that time.
Yeah, I must say, if I wouldn't have had probably four or maybe five really strong women in my life, I would have went down the wrong path, without a doubt. I mean, I had a situation mm-hmm. when I was going to PhD, you know, up to Oregon, and I got waylaid in San Francisco with a guy that wanted me to go around the world on his yacht. You know, I went into the no-name bar in Sausalito and having some drinks. This guy came in, and we just hit it off really good. And he goes, come on, come around the world with me. I'm going around the world. I go, and so I called my girlfriend. She says, Michael, get in your van and call me when you get to Eugene, Oregon. And I got to say, that was – because I was leaning in a whole other direction. So what I did is I took about these five women's personality, how strong they were, and tried to put it into Diane. Because as you'll see in the book, her past history, she's very strong. She's a very intelligent woman. And I don't want to say anything further than that.
That's just a major influence to in the general direction. But again, I just got done watching the Godfather, and while there's not Italian, we do have an homage to the mob in some points, and of course there's the Mexicans and their system of doing things, which adds a little bit of a flavor.
Kansas City mob. There's a lot of,
and that's based on real life
characters involved. Oh yeah, Kansas City mob, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. So people might actually learn. Yeah.
Yeah, and without a doubt. I don't want to give too much. I want to say something else. I don't want to give too much away. Yeah, because it would wreck your life. I mean, I hate somebody. You meet somebody who says, oh, you got to read this great book, and they tell you like half the story. And you start reading the book, and you go, why did I listen to this guy? I mean, I want to discover these things on my own. You know? So when my friends say, now they say, oh, don't tell me anything more, or a TV program. Oh, stop. I don't want to hear about it. Let me experience it. So.
Yes. So, I think we've touched a little bit, but there's no way to tell you the full thing, everything that unfolds in the hour. You know, it is a nonstop, adventure from beginning to end, with an Egyptian reference thrown in to the observant reader.
Very good. Leslie, you were talking about the mob, and I couldn't help but think of our friend Bruce. He's written, as you know, about the mob, and I'm going to make sure that he listens to the show, because he's written about the mob, as you know, himself. He's very interested in that topic, so I just wanted to say hello to Bruce. I know he listens as well.
He's like you. He's eternal. He goes on, and nothing can touch him. He rolls right on through, and
Afraid of that's what you have to be. You can't be timid in this world. You can't be timid. You have to get out there.
Yeah.
You have to. If you have strong feelings, emotions, all that, you got to have those emotions and opinions, and be very strong. And when you run into somebody that has contradictory type of opinions, stuff like that, you can discuss it with them without hating them.
Absolutely. And I think this is a nice segue into maybe rounding out our show with the discussion of current events, especially using your professional background a little bit. Again, part of the reason I'm encouraging everybody to pick up your book or pick up a book at all to distract themselves from the news is I think everybody's experiencing COVID burnout. If you could just, give a thought or two of people who are just trying to get over all the lockdown fatigue and all the issues, what would your recommendations be to getting back to be mentally healthy after the excessive amount of drama on the pandemic?
First of all, you have to develop healthy habits. And that where that starts from, you can only be successful if you have a plan. So you have to sit down, you got to work out a plan. Okay, the plan involves the brain, because you got to keep that brain healthy. And the plan involves the body, got to keep that healthy, and the personality, the emotions and all that. So in each one of those categories, I'd say do some research and say, okay, what does health look like when I'm talking about the brain? What does health look like when I'm talking about my physical side of me, whether it's eating, exercise? What does health look like on my personality, dealing with my emotions and stuff like that? And then you have to go to the side of it and say, okay, let me do a little diagnosis with what's happening right now. I need to be my own doctor. I need to do a prescription. what would your prescription look like? And you have to make sure you don't set the bar too high. I can't tell you how many times in working in therapy that I would break down the activities I wanted to do, and they would go right to the top and try to jump that top bar. And they would always fail. And I said, okay, now let's back up. Let's go back to the first step. Let's take the very first step. Because what you have to do when you're changing behavior, you have to develop habits. Habits do not develop overnight, or you wouldn't have any, the weight reduction clinics would be out of business. So you have to have the step at a time, develop that habit, and always, I use the word call process on yourself. Where are you? You need some way to reinforce yourself where you put something on the refrigerator and you map out how many pounds you're losing or your blood pressure is going down or whatever it is. You have to be able to pat yourself on the back, and you have to make those steps very small, because what we have inside of us is our ability to shoot ourselves in the foot, success neurosis. I just dealt with this the other day with one of my friends, and you have to be able to do it and grow from it so that you go to the next step, and then 6 weeks down the road, maybe 2 months down the road, the habit is starting to form, and you start dropping off those bad habits. Anytime you take anything out of your life right now, no matter how old you are, you have to replace it with something, or you'll go back to it. So my feedback to you is develop a plan for yourself. Only you can do that. And take some mental health days, too, where you don't have anybody around you so you can be with yourself, so you can enjoy yourself, and so you can re-love yourself. That is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might strongly suggest that day exclude social media, because I think social media has been a contributing factor to a lot of this stress, trying to get clicks and hits. By focusing in on, deaths and cases and other issues. So what are your thoughts on social media and its contribution to the issues that we're having today?
It's been too important for the kids. It's too important. They should not be spending that time, all that time. Sometime, yes, but all that time, and then they're always worried about what people says. Now, are you going to guide your life? Or do you want to have a child behave on the way other people see them, or have them feel secure about themselves? Because if you don't do that, what kind of risk are they going to take? They're not going to take any risk at all. So, so what kind of society do you have? Well, you have a society sitting back here and having the Chinese work their way across the map of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be proactive. There's at any time in your life, or your thinking or whatever, is reactive, you're on the wrong side of the fence. You have to be proactive. Because when you're reactive, that's where the depression sets in. You have no goals. You have no objectives. I mean, you got to kick yourself in the butt and get yourself being proactive, no matter what you're doing.
That is absolutely great, Michael. If I may just say something very quickly here as we wrap up.
I
love the way you said it. I love what you said. I think you said something. I'm going to paraphrase what you said, but you're too much time on social media or something like that. With young people, that's exactly right. I mean, when a 17, 18-year-old person, or for that matter, 30 or 35-year-old, spends that much time on something, you're giving up something perhaps even better. So I love the way you put it. I thought that was absolutely perfect. The way you said it, I thought it was absolutely perfect. Leslie, we got to wrap up, so let's maybe do one more
I'll do one more question.
Question, Leslie.
Who's your favorite editor?
Yeah.
Leslie Eastman is fantastic. I enjoy our lunches together.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good. So just to remind people, it's called Beyond Demon by Dr. Michael Sullivan, available on Kindle and paperback. Do look for the reference of Egypt, and when you do, contact Silvio via Facebook or email the first one. You'll get a free paperback version of the novel with me signing it in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics.
I'm going to spend the next 2 days looking for it. I'm going to get the book and spend the next 2 days looking for that reference. Now, it wouldn't be the word Alexandria, would it?
No. It's very subtle. It is very subtle. It is very subtle. It is a Michael Sullivan fiction.com. Michael, thank you so much. I really enjoyed editing, enjoyed the process. You are inspiration, because eventually I hope to have my own book published. It's a really great opportunity to self-publish nowadays, and we're grateful to Aaron Clary for helping us with the process. So shout out to him. Keep us posted. Hopefully you'll be back when it's time to produce your second book, and we can hear all about your further adventures.
Hey, you guys, I just had a great time. Thank you very much. Time went by too fast. That's right.
Well, it always does. That's what always happens.
Aaron.
It goes very fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you, Michael.
Yeah,
thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
And thank you to Leslie for setting it up. We wish you the very best of success. Hopefully we can help you with a few sales tonight and a little movement on your book. But I am going to look for that Egyptian reference. That's going to be my homework here for the last few days, Leslie. You got me interested.
Yeah, well, it's setting somewhat in Texas, so that's why I thought the show would be appropriate.
Oh,
for
yeah.
You got
I thought it
Texas
was.
In there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thank you so much to both of you. Leslie is always a great friend of our show, and I love these programs that you plan. And Michael, best of luck, and we'll chat again. I'm sure Leslie will bring you back.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
All right. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Good night to Leslie. Leslie, have a wonderful week, and thank you so much for connecting us with Michael. It was great.
Thank you.
All right. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. You got to get yourself a copy of this book. I mean, it sounds like a heck of a book just from what we heard tonight. Good night, everybody.